Welcome to episode 368 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Richard, it is extra nice to have you here tonight. And the reason for that is I wasn't expecting you to be here tonight.
Well, I don't think anyone was, right? I said I wasn't going to be around for 2 weeks. And then you weren't around last week.
Yeah, last week was a crazy bonkers week for me, people. And Richard wasn't around. So it was kind of a light news week. So sorry for no show. But that would have been really rough getting that out last week. So thank you to everybody who understands us not releasing one last week. And that's okay, because we've got a pretty packed show for you guys this week. As usual, we're going to start off with some listener feedback. I think most of you are going to recognize who this email is from. It's from Jason, otherwise known as Database Jace, otherwise known as one of those crazy Brits on the Digital Lifestyle podcast. So, Richard, I think since this, I kind of feel like this email is primarily targeted at me, so I think you should read it.
It is. I need to direct this to you.
And can you read it in a British accent?
No.
Dang.
I would do a terrible job.
Which is why I think you should do it that way.
Hey guys, firstly, I look forward to listening every week, so please keep up the great work. He says, thinking about the Lumia 950 and 950 XL discussion on if these are significant upgrades over the Icon 930 and 1520. I can understand why some people feel they were not a significant step forward. The main difference really is Continuum. And if that isn't of use, then really it's just speed bumps and an improved camera. I was lucky to trial both through the Lumia Voices program, now closed down. And for me, they're both great phones. The XL is just too big for me. But given I haven't purchased one myself, it seems to support the fact that it isn't enough. Plus, I'm waiting to see if the Surface phone ever arrives. Why does changing the name make everything better? Anyway, sorry, that was my editorialism. I think a better frame for this conversation is looking at the competition. And so was the iPhone 6S a significant upgrade over the 6? What about the Samsung flagships? And I also think the real discussion needs to compare two generations back, because most people update their phones every 2 years, unlike us tech enthusiasts that always want the latest and greatest. So that would be the 950 over the 920, the iPhone 6S over the 5 and 5S, and the Samsung Galaxy 7 over the 5. He says he's not an Android follower, so he may have the Galaxy numbers wrong, but I think those are right. Anyway, yeah. I hope this makes sense, and keep up the great show, Jason. I think he has a really good point there. I guess my issue isn't, again, so much that this isn't a significant bump over the other phones, because as we've stated in the past, it is a very capable device. My issue is more industrial design. It doesn't feel and look like a high-end flagship phone that I would hope that they'd be putting out. Also, I really don't understand why switching to a Surface brand is going to change anything. But that's another discussion for another time.
Well, I don't think he's implying that it's just the Surface branding that would make it different. I think he's just expecting that the Surface phone, if it actually
will miraculously be better than what we've seen so far somehow.
I don't think it's fair to say miraculously. I would expect it to be better. Will it be like dramatically better? Who knows? But it could be. I mean, the Surfaces themselves were pretty spectacular devices, so who knows?
Yep.
By and large, I agree with what Jason is saying here. The one point that I'd like to make is he says that we should look at generations of phones, especially considering that most people keep their phones for 2 years. I completely agree. That makes sense. So compare the 6S to the 5S. Sure. Compare the Galaxy S7 to the Galaxy S5. Sure. The reason that works is because there's a new phone in those flagship lines every single year. You want to compare the 950 to the 920? there were 3 years between the release of those two phones. The 920 came out in November of 2012. That's how friggin' long ago that was.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, that's like comparing the Galaxy S7 to the Galaxy S4. The Galaxy S4 came out in March of 2013. The Galaxy S7 came out in March of this year. Like, it's just, that's part of the big problem there with comparing those two. And the phones that it was really replacing, like the 1520 and the 930, were still 2 years old. And it still only felt like marginal improvements over that. So again, thank you, Jason. I think between this and the other messages that we've received in the past couple of weeks, I think we can finally lay this conversation to bed. I basically largely agree with you, Jason. And I think we're all just hoping that somehow, some way, this whole situation is going to change soon. So let's move on to our news for the week. We'll start with some video news. This is where we really like to focus our attention. And we've actually got a little bit of an update. So the other night I was sitting on my couch and thinking, I haven't really heard anything from the Silicon Dust guys in a while. I wonder what's going on with the HD Home Run DVR that was supposed to be out last fall. And then we got an update like the next day. They released an update on their Kickstarter page, and it looks like they're getting a lot closer. They're releasing like an actual software release of the DVR software specifically for Android TV. But if you're sitting there at home with say a lesser powered Android TV, don't get too excited just yet, because what they're really targeting here is the NVIDIA Shield Pro, which is one of, if not the most powerful Android TV boxes that you can buy. The NVIDIA Shield Pro can be fitted with a 500 gig hard drive. So if you throw HD Home Run DVR on an NVIDIA Shield Pro, that gives you everything all in one box, because it can then be set up to record right to that internal hard drive. Now, obviously, 500 gigs isn't really going to cut it for most people, but I assume the NVIDIA Shield also allows you to add on external storage, which is what you would do with pretty much any of the rest of these Android TV boxes, so that's not that big of a deal. But dude, that NVIDIA Shield Pro, especially when you factor in the additional $50 remote control for the thing, it's a $350 box.
For a set-side streaming box, that's ridiculous.
Well, and you know, they market this thing as like, it's not just a set-top box that does Netflix and Amazon, all that stuff, although it does do that and it does support 4K video, but they're also really gearing it towards kind of a higher end gaming console playing higher end Android games. But I don't know anyone who has one of these things. I don't know how well the whole idea of Android based gaming consoles is really taken off in the living room. But
well, let's look at how well the whole idea of Android TV itself has taken off. That really hasn't done very well. This is its latest iteration. I got a little bit of a kick out of the fact that on Home On, my guest in the last episode wasn't even aware that Android TV was a thing.
I mean, it's not something that I ever even think about.
Right.
But yeah, so you're looking at $300 to $350 for this thing. And would it be like a one-stop shop for all of your potential uses? Sure. Because, you know, if you're a cord cutter and just doing OTA or something like that, and you're just using a lot of over-the-air services and then want to add in this DVR functionality, that'd be great. But I just can't, I don't know. Like, I would love to hear from any of our listeners who have an Android TV, and I'd really love to hear from any of them that have an NVIDIA Shield Pro.
Yeah, and I mean, we know that the Fire TV is an Android TV variant, but it's not really, for lack of a better way of putting it, pure Android TV. And it too is incapable of running this new HD Home Run software. So,
right. So, I mean, it's making progress. You can use this software on other Android TV boxes, but they recommend you know, a high performing Android TV box, or else my guess is it's going to be pretty sluggish, unfortunately. And maybe this will change as they polish the software and get in some performance tweaks. But that's not the only thing to talk about. They've got some other features that they've added along the way. They've got a cool one for sports fans. You can set it up to automatically record recordings by team. So if you're a big Detroit Tigers fan, you can just tell it, record every Detroit Tigers game, and it'll do that. And that's a nice feature. I wouldn't be surprised if TiVo and some of those other guys have that. Media Center doesn't, though, so I'm not sure if this is a brand new idea or whatnot, but it's a cool idea.
It is.
But so that's cool. It's nice to see the update for, you know, it's coming out on Android TV. These types of things make you think, oh, this must be really close. And then you look at the next feature that they've added, the ability to delete recordings. How is this just now coming to the software?
Especially if the maximum storage you have is 500 gig on this particular device.
Right. Yeah, that would be bad. So it's coming. There's still a lot left to do, including they still haven't really gotten the whole protected, copy protected channel support done yet. On the Windows side, to kind of quote what they have in their post here, they say protected channel support has been quite a frustration. We have the TV working in our Windows Universal app for Windows 10. However, we can't release it because Microsoft does not allow a Windows Universal app to request or verify HDCP operation, which is required to meet the protection requirements. So they're looking for a workaround, but it's taking time. So that's why we still on the Windows side can't watch protected content via the HD Home Run View app. So hopefully that comes. Yeah, that's the big thing for me, and that's the big frustration as to why I don't get to use this app a lot personally, because a lot of times I want to be watching hockey. And if that's on NBC Sports, that's typically copy protected for me, and all of the racing and stuff that I watch, all of that's on copy protected channels. So
this was particularly frustrating to me, this reveal that they had about the protected content. I kind of feel like we're watching one of the classic FedEx commercials, the ones where they said, yeah, we can do that. Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, we can do that. How are we going to do that? I kind of feel like that's the situation that we're in now, where they kind of sold this idea that they didn't know if they were going to be able to pull off or not. And this strikes me as the kind of thing that very early on in their development process, they should have defined a spike of a development activity geared toward proving out the technical viability of doing this.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is an obscure limitation that, you know, I'm a developer. I write Windows apps, and I didn't know about this limitation. Now, I don't write media apps, so maybe that's a good reason why I didn't know about this limitation, but it is pretty obscure. But it is something that they should have done their homework on early on. And, you know, maybe they did. Maybe they've been spending a lot of time trying to solve this problem, and because they haven't had anything else to tell us, they're just now telling us, you know, this is why it's taking so long. So I don't want to judge them too much on that, because maybe they have, but that sounds like a pretty big roadblock, and I'm really not sure how they get around that. So I don't know. We'll see. I am excited to get my hands on this eventually. They are releasing things. They're putting out some cool features there. The UI is looking interesting. I really want to play with it soon. So hopefully we'll get our hands on something sooner rather than later.
Yep.
So this next story, Richard, you're probably looking at the notes and just looking at the title of this and thinking, why the heck is this story under the video news? And it actually makes sense. So
okay, I'm waiting.
This story came up today. Microsoft has announced what they're calling convenience roll-up updates for older versions of Windows. So if you're familiar with how Windows updates work in Windows 10, they do cumulative monthly updates in Windows 10 so that If you're a little bit behind, it's just bam, you get one big update and you don't have to worry with about a zillion updates. So on Windows 7, and you recently, I think, did this, Richard, where you had to start over with a new Windows 7 box. And even if you start with Windows 7 SP1, you have about a billion updates to install after that.
Oh, yeah. I think it was like 129 updates or something. It was crazy. And that was just the first wave.
Right. Yeah. The first wave, because you probably had to reset 2, 3, 4 times in that process and start it all over again. And it's nuts. So what this is doing is giving one big massive update that's basically everything from Service Pack 1 up through April of this year as one giant update. So that's going to dramatically decrease the amount of time and effort to build a new Windows 7 Media Center box if you have to pay for it. So that's why this is in the video section.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. And is this something that's going to be available like now? Is this available today?
It's absolutely available today, but it's not available how you would expect it. So,
expect it through MSDN.
Well, that's not it either, actually. See, I would expect it as now, if I'm on Windows 7, I would expect that if I go to Windows Updates, it's going to pull this thing down.
Oh, no, I wouldn't expect
that. If I just build a new box. And it doesn't do that. So instead, you have to go to the site called the Microsoft Update Catalog. There's a link to it in the story that we're going to link to in the show notes here. And you download the package from there onto your machine and run the update that way, I guess. I don't specifically know how to do this. I've never dealt with this Microsoft Update Catalog thing before. But I will tell you that if you want to go to that site, it requires Internet Explorer. So don't go there in Chrome. It won't work.
What?
Yeah, it looks like a really old site. It looks really old. But so that's one option. You know, you can build a new box, install Windows 7 SP1, then go here, get this giant update and go to town. Another option is, and this gets a lot more technical, and I don't really know how you do this, but you could get this update, and I think you would do this in a process they call slipstreaming, where you take this update and you put it right on your Windows 7 SP1 install media, so probably a USB drive. And in the process of installing Windows 7, you just get everything. And when it's done installing, it's all done. So that would be the ideal way to do it if you're about to build a new Windows 7 Media Center box. So this is really great news. I mean, this could save you hours upon hours of time if you have to rebuild a Windows 7 Media Center machine.
Yeah. I guess I'm just confused why it's not packaged up and also available through MSDN.
Yeah, that would be nice, just to make that one ISO to download. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they will.
You know, maybe the people in Microsoft that own the Service Pack SP number moniker won't allow them to use that, so it can't be called a Service Pack or something. Who knows?
Right. Even though that is what this is, a Windows 7 Service Pack 2. They're just not calling it
that. Yeah, for all intents and purposes, it is. Exactly.
Right. So that's some good news there for anybody who's still building Windows 7 Media Center machines, which I think is a fair number of people in our listening audience. So let's move on to some gaming news. And actually, this first topic is kind of an interesting one. So Xbox Live as a service has been around for, gosh, I'm not even sure. I think for 15 years now, I want to say. It's been
Gen
around
one,
for really...
wasn't it?
Yeah, it came out at some point during the first generation Xbox, but I'm not exactly sure what year. And as long as Xbox Live has been around, so is the concept of gamer tags. You've got a username on Xbox Live and it's called a gamer tag. Well, this week, May 18th, so it's probably already started after you're listening to this or before you're listening to this, but Microsoft is making over 1 million gamer tags that haven't been used forever in like 5+ years available for you to claim. They're going to essentially remove them from the system and make them completely available. And you can change your gamer tag to maybe something that was really cool, but not being used in the past. Now it can be yours. What are your thoughts on this, Richard?
My thoughts are, why are they heralding the long missing database cleanup utility as a grand new feature? This is ridiculous. They should have been going through and culling anything that hadn't been used in the last 5 years or however many years and automatically making it available on a rolling cycle. I cannot believe this was just astounding to me to learn that they had been holding any used gamer tag still as unavailable. That's just absurd.
Well, they have done this at least once before. But yeah, it's not like it's something that they've been doing on a rolling basis, like you said. Because they did do this in 2011, so 5 years ago. But yeah, I mean, it would be nice. But I don't know. This way kind of makes it, it makes it more fun. You know, everybody can dive in on Wednesday and,
see,
and
you've
try
totally,
to grab some.
You've totally bought in on the spin.
Partly because I don't care. I'm not going to change my gamer tag. Some people might want to, though. And it sounds like there's some potentially some cool names in there. The proper names, pop culture references, types of food, sciences and technology, animals. And then the last bullet point is some of the greatest inventions of all time. So there's probably some neat things in there. I don't know. It's an interesting story. I understand your frustration. It would be nice. Like, you know, I have a friend who he's a big, big time gamer, but he hasn't been an Xbox guy until last year. Last year, he bought an Xbox One and he never had any of the other Xboxes. So,
wow. So how many numbers does he have in his gamer tag?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, he spent a while trying to figure out what his gamer tag should be. And he came up with a cool one for him, and it doesn't have numbers in it and stuff.
Wow.
But a lot of the ones that he wanted to use, I mean, there were probably dozens that he tried to use. They were all taken. And maybe come Wednesday, you know, some of those ones that he would have tried to have signed up for last August will become available. And they could have been available last August too, because these gamer tags that they're releasing, these ones are from like first generation Xbox time frame. They specifically said that these accounts were never migrated to the Xbox 360. So these are super, super old. So, all right. Like I get your frustration. I think it can be kind of a fun thing to go in and do. But the one thing that I do want to point out to people is, you know, Microsoft talks about how you can change your gamer tag and you can change it once for free, but otherwise it's $10 to change it. And the thing that's really frustrating about this whole you can change your gamer tag once for free thing is if you already have a Microsoft account, you're already assigned some super generic gamer tag. So the first time that you go to give yourself a good gamer tag, that's your free change. If you want to change it again after that, which is really your first real change, because changing it from their pre-made up one that you don't care about to one of your choosing really shouldn't count as your free change, but it does. So if you want to do this come Wednesday, it's going to cost you $10 most likely. That's not going to be the case for everybody, depending on how you signed up for your gamer tag initially, but be prepared to drop $10 if you really want to change your gamer tag this week.
That totally sucks.
Yeah, that does suck. It totally sucks. It's totally lame that they charge you for that.
That's like, that is, just, oh man. Again, it's just a process that's kicked off that is a simple change to a field in the database. And they're charging you a transaction fee.
Yep. Ugh. Yep. It's totally lame. I don't get it. All right. So you're really frustrated by that news. We'll move on to some other things. We'll get into some geeky gaming stuff so that you don't have to even talk, so that you can really cool down for the next couple of minutes. Okay.
I'm just going to go on mute and rant to myself.
Sounds good. All right. So this year has been you know, one of the big things out of the gaming space on Windows is that Microsoft has been releasing big AAA games through the Windows Store. But there have been some limitations in the past. And Microsoft said from the moment they released Tomb Raider in January that, yes, here are a bunch of limitations to games that you buy from the Windows Store that run as UWPs, but we're working on it. We hear your complaints. We're working on it. We're going to get these changes out to you quickly. Well, we've already gotten our first big update. So there's a new update, and what it does is it will allow you in game to disable VSync, which for a lot of people do this. What VSync does is it tries to lock your frame rate to the refresh rate of your monitor. The reason it does this is because if they're not in sync, you'll get screen tearing. Most people know what that looks like who are gamers, who are PC gamers, and it's frustrating. But it means that if you want higher than 60 frames per second, you can't get it with VSync enabled. So they're allowing you to turn that off if you want, with the caveat that, hey, you're going to get some screen tearing. Unless you have a FreeSync or a G-Sync monitor, because they've also enabled support for those two technologies. I won't get too much into to what those are or the politics of those two competing standards, but they're basically technologies that allow you to run at those higher frame rates without getting the screen tearing. It just requires special monitors to be able to do that. So those are more expensive monitors. So that's cool. We've got a link to that for more information in the show notes. We'll move on to this next story. Backwards compatibility between the Xbox 360 and the Xbox One. News on that has been continually rolling out really, really fast. It, you know, we mentioned a couple of months ago that Microsoft was going to stop doing big bulk releases of games as backwards compatible. They would just start releasing them as they're available, and they have been coming fast. There have been a ton of them over the last couple of months. And one thing that they did announce is that they're now making it so that games that required multiple discs on the Xbox 360 are now going to be supported, are now actually supported via backwards compatibility with the Xbox One. Now, currently, there's only one title that does that, but there's a whole lot more that could potentially be supported. So some of the bigger ones would be like Mass Effect 2 and 3 were on multiple disc. Final Fantasy 13 and its sequels were all on multiple disc. One of my favorite role-playing games from the Xbox 360, Lost Odyssey, that was 4-disc. Now, Microsoft isn't saying that these are definitely going to become backwards compatible, but it's far more likely that they could be now that this support is in there. Now, this led me to do a little bit more digging, because the way that backwards compatibility works is if you own the game digitally already, then it just downloads the digital copy to your Xbox One and you're good to go. If you own the game physically, then you stick the disc in to prove that you own it, and then it downloads the game digitally from the Xbox 360 store and you play it and you have to leave the disc in to verify. So here's the problem. I went digging through the Xbox 360 store to see if I could find other multi-disc games in the Xbox 360 store. I couldn't find any of them. Mass Effect 2 and 3, they're not available digitally. Final Fantasy 13, not available digitally. Lost Odyssey, not available digitally. So for these games to become backwards compatible, first they have to end up in the store, and they're not. So that's probably going to be our big clue as to when these games do become backwards compatible, is if you see them show up in the store. It's probably going to be right about the same time that they release them as backwards compatible.
My brain is still scrambled about how you have multi-disc in a digital world, but whatever. I didn't even know this was a limitation.
Yep. Yeah, they had announced that as a limitation back when they first announced backwards compatibility at E3 last year, but it doesn't impact that many games. It's really, for the most part, it's really only these gigantic role-playing games that tend to be on on multiple discs. And that was a thing because the Xbox 360 ran on DVDs. And
oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're just not very big. PlayStation 3 had Blu-ray, so it wasn't an issue. But on 360, it was. Yep. So let's move on. Next story. I don't think we covered this last time because I think this came out just days after we recorded last time. Forza Motorsport 6 Apex is now available. I think we announced that it was coming, but it wasn't actually available yet when we last recorded. This is the free-to-play Windows 10 version of Forza Motorsport 6, and I got it, and it's pretty awesome, I gotta say. I mean, it's Forza. It is everything that you love and hate about Forza on your PC. And I say that as the guy who very specifically did not buy Forza 6 last year on my Xbox One, because while it looks great and the driving is great, I don't like the racing. So that's still absolutely the case with Forza Motorsport 6 Apex, but at least it's free. So I downloaded it and played it, and it does work on my PC, but you will need some decent hardware. Like if you're just running a Surface Pro, don't bother downloading this game. It won't run. And it's huge. This is an 18 gigabyte download. And the Windows Store doesn't have any way of like checking your hardware to tell you whether or not it meets the minimum requirements or anything like that. So you're just going to sit there and wait while an 18 gig game downloads to be able to try to see if it even runs. And if it doesn't, well, sorry, you just filled up your hard drive and blew through a bunch of bandwidth for nothing. The other thing that I was concerned about, and we talked about this back when Tomb Raider launched in January, was how will they handle updates to the games? Because with regular apps, the way that I've normally seen it work in Windows is that when there's an app update, you get the whole app downloaded again. And I don't want to download 18 gigs every time there's an update to the game. Fortunately, they apparently figured this out. I have not seen this for myself because I had auto updates turned on, but in various comments and stuff that I had seen on other posts around the internet, it sounds like the updates that have come out for Forza Motorsport 6 Apex have been in the 200 to 300 megabyte range. So that's really, really good news if you're bandwidth conscious. So again, if you've got a pretty decent machine and they've got the minimum and recommended hardware requirements out in the store and on the website, if your machine meets those requirements, go out and check this out because it's Forza. You're going to like it if you like Forza. It doesn't support it doesn't support racing wheels yet, but they're working on that. So if you've got an Xbox One controller to plug into your PC and you've got a decent graphics card, go ahead and check this out because it's what you're expecting.
Cool.
So now on to some sadder news. We had mentioned last fall that Project Spark, Microsoft's game building game, I guess is what we've always called this, was being turned into basically a completely free thing. It wasn't going to cost anything to buy it digitally, and a bunch of the content they were making free. Well, this week they announced that Project Spark is going to be shut down. It's already been removed from the store, so you can't go and download it anymore if you didn't already have it installed. And if you are still playing it, well, the servers are going dark in August. On August 12th, it's going away. You're not going to have anything after August, unfortunately. And there's a little bit of good news here. The good news is if you purchase this game at retail after they had made that announcement last fall, which means after October 5th, you can contact them and get a refund. Like how often do you see that? Never.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, that's really nice. The other little bit of good news here is that this is a Microsoft Studios project. Microsoft Studios isn't going anywhere. So all of the developers that worked on this, they've just been moved to other projects. So while it's a game that's being shut down and it's going away, at least no one got laid off. That's pretty nice to see, especially we recently saw Lionhead Studios, the makers of the Fable games, get shut down, and all of those guys lost their jobs. At least in this situation, none of these guys lost their jobs. So sad to see Project Spark go away, but I was one of the people that was originally really excited about it when they announced it back in, I think they announced it at E3 of 2013. And I played with it a little on my Surface and I played with it a little bit on my Xbox, but that was it. I never really went back to it. And so I guess I'm part of the problem.
Well, and I kind of think that this was their answer to Minecraft. Create your own world, create your own game kind of thing. This was really driving toward that creativity side, that creation side in the gaming space that prior to owning Minecraft, Microsoft really didn't have. It's frustrating to me that they're turning it off. I wish they would just leave it on, because what I hate here, what I really, really hate is, let's say you encourage your kid to spend some time working with this tool to kind of build something and learn how to do this, and had this digital creation that existed in their virtual, quote, store or whatever that they warehouse that they had available. And now it's just gone. It is a sunk investment of time that is no longer available to you. And that to me seems like a disservice to their customers.
Well, so that's not entirely correct. So it sounds like, well, the blog post that they put up is not super clear on this. When I read it, it made it sound like the stuff that's on the servers is like, if you made a game and you wanted to give it to the community, or you made some content that you wanted to make available to the community, it sounds like anything that you have already on your Xbox or PC will still work. You just won't be able to get new stuff or share it with other people. That's how I'm interpreting this.
So if you hack it, okay. I need to look into that a little bit more, because I have a hard time understanding how that works. At the very least, it sounds like you would never be able to go back and kind of tweak something that you had created.
I think you'd probably even be able to tweak the things that you created. You just...
How? If the servers are going dark? I mean, I don't understand that.
Because I think the servers are essentially just a store for like pieces of content to put into your games or whole games. And anything that you've already downloaded onto your machine, anything that you've already gotten from that store, you have, and it's going to continue to work.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe
I
that's
need to research
me being too
more.
Optimistic.
Yeah. I hope that's true, but that's not what I got out of this.
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunate. We'll miss you, Project Spark.
Meanwhile, right, Minecraft.
Well, and yeah, it's not exactly like Minecraft, but they definitely both tap into those creative juices for sure.
Yeah.
So here's a little bit of good news. This isn't officially announced, but the guys over at the website Cheap Ass Gamer tweeted that EA is going to be making EA Access free for Xbox Live Gold users in June. That would be June 12th through June 22nd. If that date sounds familiar, June 12th is essentially when E3 starts. EA's announcement, I believe, is Sunday, June 12th. So basically for a week and a half in June, if you're an Xbox Live Gold subscriber, you'll be able to download anything that is in that EA Access vault for free and play it as much as you want for a week and a half. So that'll be really cool if you're an Xbox Live Gold subscriber.
It's like the old free Showtime and HBO weekends that they used to do.
It's exactly like that. Yep. All right. Only one more story in the gaming section. So
yeah.
So use this as your opportunity to get your final rest in before we close out the show. Okay, Richard? So
all right.
Last one. This week's deals with gold and spotlight sale. This one is actually a really good sale. So there's a bunch of good stuff, plus they're partnering with Square Enix to do some extra Square titles in here. Here's, like, I always like to pull out a couple of games that I think would be good purchases. I came up with six, and that isn't even most of the list of things on sale. Here's what would pique my interest. Call of Duty Black Ops 3, it's $40. That game does not go on sale very often. Forza Motorsport 6 is $40. Life is Strange, the complete season, it's half off, so that's $10. I'm loving this game.
That was that awesome animated thing, right?
Yes, it's sort of like a Telltale game. You're this high school girl who finds out that she can rewind time a little bit. It's really, really cool. Loving this game. Still playing it. Plants vs. Zombies, Garden Warfare 2. It's half off. That means it's $30. That's a fun, you know, shooter game to play with your kids. That isn't too violent because it's Plants vs. Zombies.
Plants vs. Zombies. I just absolutely love that game.
Witcher 3, that's down to $25. So that's you know, that one game of the year all over the place. That's a pretty easy purchase. And then Unravel, that really cute game that was published by EA just a couple of months ago. Side-scrolling platformer where you're a guy made out of yarn. Beautiful graphics, super cute. A lot of fun. That's half off also for $10. So lots and lots of great sales with the games with or deals with gold program this week. All right, so let's move into some mobile news. We've got a couple of big releases for the Windows 10 Insider program. One on PC, one on mobile. They're both the same version number, 14342. And these are kind of a big deal. So basically on both of them, they've made some enhancements to Edge. On the PC side, you've got full support for extensions finally. So there's a few extensions already available in the Windows Store. They've also brought back the swipe gestures for navigation inside of Edge. So if you're on a tablet, you can finally swipe the page back to navigate back in the navigation stack. I really, really love having that back again.
I don't understand why that was missing. That was great.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I really, really missed when Windows 10 came out. They've fixed that DRM issue with like Groove Music and some of the other apps that were having trouble playing DRM songs. On the mobile side, they've added better media playback buttons on the lock screen. They actually look like buttons. They actually behave like buttons now. That's kind of a nice thing. They've also got all of this messaging everywhere functionality working. So if you have a Windows 10 PC and a Windows 10 mobile phone, and they're both on these recent releases, these Redstone releases, you can open the messaging app on your PC and send and receive text messages through your phone. This isn't anything new for like iOS guys who are on Macs, but it's nice to finally have this feature in the Windows ecosystem. They also have decided to radically change what exactly Wi-Fi Sense is. Wi-Fi Sense basically has two main features. It will store your Wi-Fi credentials for all of the places that you go and sync them across all of your devices. That's cool. That's staying. But it also had this controversial feature where you could set it up to share specific Wi-Fi credentials for specific networks with your contacts, so that if your friends come over and want to get on your Wi-Fi, you don't have to give them the credentials. It automatically is on their PC. It's a cool idea. There was lots of FUD about this when it came out last year. It wasn't nearly as insecure as what a lot of people made it out to be, but Microsoft has decided to kill that feature off. It probably just wasn't worth the PR problems to keep maintaining that.
That whole thing kind of baffles me. I think that was more of a communication problem. I don't think they really did a very good job of explaining what that really did and how it benefited you. I mean, to the point that when I first had the initial builds of Windows 10, I turned it off. Because the description in the interface seemed like, whoa, I don't want that happening.
Right. Yeah, they didn't do a great job of communicating what that was and what the limitations were around it. So now they don't have to worry about it.
One of the things that I missed in the last update that we talked about, and that was the one that reintroduced the full screen tile view for tablets, is that they also reintroduced the ability to hide the, I don't even know what you call it now, but the status bar, the bar at the bottom of the screen, you can hide that in tablet view now. Huzzah!
Yeah, it's definitely gotten a lot better on Windows tablets. Absolutely. It's gotten a lot better. Is it as good as what Windows 8 was? Probably not still, but it's getting a lot closer to what we had with Windows 8.1. Now, there are a couple of important things that I want to point out to people who are thinking of spending some time this weekend, maybe updating their devices, but especially your phone. So, one of the key features, I didn't even mention this. It's my first bullet point and I skipped right over it. I installed this update on my phone because it finally fixed the issue that was causing Tweedium to crash. That's why I've been sitting out the last few releases of Windows 10 Mobile on my 1520. It's because Tweedium didn't work. And Tweedium is not just my favorite Windows phone app. It's my favorite app on any platform ever. I love Tweedium. So I wasn't going to upgrade until Tweedium worked again. It does. So what I do, as soon as the news hit last night that this build was available and that Tweedium worked, I installed it on my phone, my main phone, my daily driver, the phone that I depend on.
Yeah.
Because why not? It always works. It went wrong. it appeared to go really, really wrong. So it went through, did the whole update, you know, got the gears and all that stuff. And then it went to reboot. And when it rebooted, it got stuck on the screen that shows the Windows flag. Now, I was doing this like minutes after this became available. And like, I let it sit there for minutes, probably at least 10 minutes. And it was just stuck. And I thought, well, it's hosed. I better, I guess I'm going to have to pull out the device recovery tool and restore this thing back to 8.1 and then try and go through all this stuff again. Got the Windows recovery tool installed. It wouldn't work. That's when I really started to panic. It wouldn't reflash my device. So then looked up how to use, you know, the physical buttons to do an actual hard reset of the phone that way. That worked. It's a complicated process in Windows 10. It worked. And because the actual update to Windows 10 was successful, when it did the hard reset, it just did the hard reset to version 14342, the latest version. And I was able to just say, all right, restore all of my apps and settings from my previous backup, and away it went. What I found out later in the evening was that whole it's stuck at the Windows login or the Windows logo screen is a known issue, and it's okay. You're supposed to just let it go. And they said it can take 30, 45 minutes with it sitting at that screen, but eventually it will finish and everything will be fine. But when I looked at the blog post, I swear that wasn't in there. It's in there now, but a lot of people aren't going to scroll all the way to the bottom of that post. So if you're thinking of doing this to your phone and it looks like it gets stuck on that screen, just let it be. Go for a bike ride. Go play in the backyard with your kids. I don't know. It's going to be a while, but it theoretically is going to finish. You know, if you wait like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, and it still isn't finished, then maybe you're hosed and you need to go through the hard reset process. But you probably aren't going to have to do that. Just be patient and it should finish up. There is one other thing that I want to point out, and I'm seeing this from a lot of people on Reddit and Twitter and stuff like that, the battery life for me has been abysmal. Like, I've never seen battery life this bad. Like, my phone went from fully charged to 50% in like 3 hours. And I basically
that's
had
like
to just,
iPhone batteries.
Oh my gosh, it's horrible. And eventually later I was reminded, oh yeah, there in the settings, there's a battery usage thing that tells you what apps are using the battery. It had said that over the past 6 hours, there's one app that's used 70% of your battery, and it's called Cortana.
Oh, geez.
No idea what Cortana was doing there. Tried to go into the Cortana settings to try and disable some things. I also found just yesterday, I had set one of those location reminders. You know, I was like, hey, Cortana, remind me to call so-and-so when I leave work. And it actually didn't work. Like, those reminders normally do work, but it never popped up. And I was like, oh, maybe that's, you know, it's trying to do some crazy location thing and it hasn't figured out if I've left work yet. And that's what's killing the battery. So I found that reminder and they're still killed that. I don't know if that's going to fix it, but I sure hope they fix this soon because it's bordering on unusable with how bad the battery life is for me. And other people have said it on other phones. It's not just the 1520. And then one other bug that I found and reported this and the battery life in the feedback hub, the quick actions give you the ability to cycle between low, medium, high, and auto for display brightness. The auto option has disappeared for me. And no matter what I set it on, it sure seems to me like it's actually on high, which is also going to murder your battery.
Yeah, it is.
So hopefully they're going to come up with some fixes to this stuff really, really fast because I'm betting that if I were to leave work tomorrow with the phone fully charged, it wouldn't make it through the rest of the night. So that's going to have to change. So
hey, I got a new charger for my iPhone that you might be able to use. Oh, wait, no, it has a lightning connector on it.
Oh, I believe me, as I was thinking about, oh, I've got like Eden softball stuff tomorrow. Maybe I should bring one of my portable battery charger thingies with me.
Yeah. I can't leave the house without one now. I mean, my phone is so bad. I was down to 50% by like 11:30 today.
That's rough.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yep. It's 2016. We shouldn't still be having these issues.
No. No, we should not.
Okay. Well, Richard, that is all the news that we have for this week. What has been going on in your entertainment center?
I have been traveling and I have been watching a lot of stuff. I've also been shopping. So first off, the Drovo update, still recovering, but we're not going to speak of this because remember I had mentioned that I'm going to be traveling for a couple weeks. So until I come back, I'm not going to worry about it. I bought a new monitor for one of my computers, and this isn't specifically media related, but what's interesting about this and why I thought it was worth discussing is that I actually caved and bought a curved monitor.
Hey, as much as you and I hate curved TVs, we've always said that curved computer monitors make a lot of sense.
And I really like it.
Now, didn't you have one of those big Apple monitors?
I do. This is for my work computer.
Oh.
So this is something that I attach to my MacBook Pro or MacBook Air that I use for work. And then I end up basically just using the monitor separately. And I really like it. I've never actually had a curved monitor before. It makes perfect sense for the application that I have. It kind of nestles in the back of my corner desk. They work perfect on corner desks. So
I bet.
Yeah, I'm really happy with this. It's good stuff. And of course, you know, while I'm in Best Buy buying monitors, I'm looking at big screens too. Josh, I'm getting the 4K itch.
Really?
The problem is, I still don't know which HDR to bite on, right? There's still two competing standards. And it's unclear to me whether we're going to end up in a situation where one wins or you just have to get a television that supports both.
Yeah, and it sounds like if you want to buy something right now, you're going to want to buy one that supports both.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to hold out, but I'm getting the itch. And those 55-inch TVs that would fit nicely where my current plasma is. Now, why would I get rid of my plasma? Because it's 4K. They look so nice.
They do look so nice, but are you going to be able to tell the difference from where you're sitting? No.
I don't know.
You won't.
I don't know.
Like, go and look at the calculators. You're still going to have to be really darn close to see the difference in resolution. Now, you're right to, of course, point out HDR, because you will see a difference in that, regardless of screen size and how far away you are.
Yeah.
But just the resolution isn't going to make that big of a difference. It might not make any difference.
All right. Well, how about enhancing my audio then? Because I'm getting the Dolby Atmos itch too.
You got a lot of expensive itches, my friend.
And this one, I'm held back by dollars because I actually did some research this past weekend to find out what it would cost. And it would be a receiver that costs nearly $1,000. It would be the addition of ceiling speakers or the replacement of my front speakers that have reflectors on them, either of which is going to cost me a couple $100s. So this is like $1,500-$1,600 to get into from my current situation, which is already a pretty damn good 7.1 sound system.
Yeah. That isn't old. Like, you just put that in, what, last year?
Yeah, like last year, a year and a half ago. But, man, every time I see one of those Dolby Atmos demos, and more Blu-ray discs are getting released with Dolby Atmos.
Yeah, but see, if you bite on all these itches, you're also going to need to get an Ultra HD Blu-ray player. So that's another $400.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah. I haven't bought yet. I don't know that I will in the near term, but it's starting to look really good. All right. Well, meanwhile, less expensive stuff. I've been watching some television and some movies. So The Amazing Race season that I've been watching ended, and I'm bummed because neither of the groups that I wanted to win won. But oh well, it was an entertaining season. I have also been keeping up on Arrow and The Flash. Both of them, I think, are so good this season. Really enjoying them. Penny Dreadful. I don't know if I've ever talked about this before. Penny Dreadful is a kind of Victorian horror series on Showtime that intermingles all of these horror mythologies into a very complicated, very good storyline. And that has started in its third season, so I've been enjoying that. And I started a new thing, something that I probably never would have expected to ever, ever watch. And I'm watching it for two reasons. One is because the reviews on it have been amazing. And the other is because it's the next thing that they're going to talk about in a new podcast that I started listening to. And so this is The People versus O.J. Simpson on FX Networks.
Okay, I've heard a lot of people talking about that. Is that on any of the streaming services yet?
It's on FX Now. So okay. If you get FX, all the episodes are streamable on FX Now. Just remember that FX Now comes with many, many, many ads. I don't know if you remember when spoke about how I was watching something on FX Now and I counted 50 ads in an hour's show.
Yeah, bonkers.
Hint. Use PlayOn, and with their premium service, it cuts out the ads for you.
There you go. Now you're talking, Richard.
Exactly. So that is how I'm watching that. And I am really enjoying it. And the podcast that I'm referring to, and we haven't talked about podcasts in a long time, is called Real Crime Profile. And this is a podcast hosted by a retired FBI agent and an active. I don't even know the name of the equivalent UK organization, but Interpol, whatever, in someone in the UK who also has FBI training, and the person who casts roles in Criminal Minds.
Oh, so interesting.
Talk about an interesting pair up of people. Yeah. And they talk through different crime, like real crime drama stuff that's being presented, and talk about, you know, what should have been done, why this perhaps was a, you know, justice wasn't served in this case, or why this happened the way it did. It's really, really interesting. The first show that they did, or the first arc that they did, was based on Making a Murderer, which was the Netflix series about Avery Brooks, who was accused of killing a woman, and his nephew, who was accused of assisting him with that. And both of them are serving life sentences right now. And in both cases, although it's entirely likely that Avery, in fact, did murder this woman, his trial was completely mishandled. And the fact that his nephew is in prison is just an abomination of our legal system. It's unbelievable. So this is a really, really interesting perspective on breaking that all down. And the next thing that they're going to be talking about is People versus O.J. Simpson. So I wanted to get a head start on it. I also saw two movies. I was in San Francisco last week. And whenever I'm in San Francisco, I try to see something on the big screen at the Metreon, because I love that theater. And I saw Captain America Civil War, and I loved it. Thought it was great.
What's that about? I've never heard of it.
You're kidding, right?
I'm just kidding. Yeah. I still haven't seen it yet, but Jenna and I were talking about trying to go see it, but we've also got the X-Men movie coming out like next weekend, and you know, going to see movies is difficult when it requires lining up babysitters and all that stuff, and I'm much more an X-Men than I am Captain America, so...
Yeah. Well, I'm a Captain America guy, and there was lots of fan service in this thing. And, you know, I heard on Cord Killers, I think one of the things they said was that this was the Avengers movie that you expected to get in the last Avengers movie. Mm. And I am totally behind that. This was a fantastic Avengers movie. So... really, really good. I recommend it to anybody that is enjoying these movies so far. I think I read that this is creeping up on hitting already $1 billion in box office receipts worldwide, which is just insane.
I'm not surprised.
And I finally, now that it's on disc and arrived at the house, have seen Deadpool. And oh my God, that is funny. That is such a funny and enjoyable film. And that has X-Men tie-ins that are very enjoyable. So I would highly recommend seeing or watching that if you haven't already. That's available digitally in nearly every service out there now.
Yeah, that one's also one that I haven't seen, but thought about renting digitally.
Yeah, they did a great job with it. So that is it for me. So how about you, Josh?
So not a ton of stuff to watch because it's been, like I said, a really, really crazy couple of weeks for me. I did finish Homeland season 2, so I'm just like 2 episodes into Homeland season 3. I don't think I talked about how I've been watching this. So I signed up to do the, you know, you can go 1 month at a time on Showtime anytime through Amazon. So that's what I did. That's how I've been watching this. And, it's interesting. I mean, it makes watching Showtime shows as simple and easy and the exact same experience as watching anything else through Amazon Prime Video. So that's been really cool. The thing that I didn't expect out of this, though, is that when you start, you know, when you sit down and start a new viewing session, it starts with a pre-roll ad for Showtime. That's kind of annoying. You can't skip it. Fortunately, it's not super long. I think it's 30 seconds or less. But like I had heard of Penny Dreadful because of these pre-roll ads that I have to watch before watching Homeland. Other than that, I never would have heard of Penny Dreadful until you mentioned it tonight. So that's kind of annoying. It's not that big of a deal. It's by no means a showstopper, especially with how easy it is to watch everything else. But it was just something I found really interesting with how Showtime works with Amazon.
Showtime does that on Showtime Anytime and on purchased Showtime programs as well.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
That's annoying. Okay. So in terms of things I've been watching, the only other thing that I've been able to make time for is, of course, to continue watching the NHL playoffs because, hey, my Penguins, they're still in it. Eastern Conference Finals right now. So still rooting for them as you should be also. Everyone should be rooting for the Penguins right now, and I appreciate that. So then in terms of gaming, I had mentioned the last time we recorded that the Overwatch beta was going to be opening up. This would have been 2 weekends ago. I played a fair amount of that, really, really enjoyed that. Ended up pre-ordering the game because played with like 3 or 4 other friends. We all had a blast playing it together. And we basically all just, you know, got together and said, well, I'll buy it if you buy it, and I'll buy it if you buy it. And so we kind of just all sat down and ordered it together. So definitely going to be playing more Overwatch when that comes out later this month. And then I'm also trying to get through Life is Strange. I mentioned that a little bit earlier. That game is so, so good. There are some really, really emotional moments in that game. And I love good storytelling and you know, ways to capture the emotions of a player in a game. And this game is doing it so, so well. So again, if you've got an Xbox, go and check this out because it's only $10 for the whole thing on Xbox One right now. But it's also on Steam and it's probably on PlayStation. It's got to be on PlayStation. So it's on everything. Go and play Life is Strange. It's great. And then, like I also mentioned a little bit earlier, been playing a little bit of Forza Apex. The thing that I really like about this, while it has the typical racing problems that I don't like about Forza games, it's short. You know, so if I've only got a few minutes, I can sit down and burn through a couple of races in just a few minutes, which is the dumb thing that, you know, that's not racing, but at least it satisfies that itch of driving fast cars for a few minutes. So that's been cool. And that's pretty much it for what I've been watching and playing.
All right.
But we do have one more special announcement. We mentioned a little bit earlier, I think, maybe we didn't, but we've been talking a lot about Windows gaming. And of course, one of the biggest games that has come out on both Xbox One and Windows 10 this year has been Quantum Break. It's an Xbox and Windows exclusive. And on PC, it's only available through the Windows 10 store. Well, our good friend, Marcus Lyons, he goes by Trombone for Hire. He goes by Unlocked Xbox on Twitter also. He has a code for the Windows 10 version that he wants to give away to you wonderful listeners. He's giving us this code to give away to you guys. So there's a post, as long as you're not listening live, there's a post on the website, and it's linked in the show notes here, for how to get entered into the contest to win this code for Quantum Break. It'll be completely free. The one thing you need to know, like Forza Motorsport 6 Apex, this game has some fairly high requirements. You've got to have a decent PC to play this game at an enjoyable level. So check out those system requirements for what Quantum Break needs. You might want to do that before entering the contest because you wouldn't want to win something that you can't really use. So check that out and then head on over to the website, enter the contest, and good luck. Because frankly, I wish I could win. I would love to play this game. So good luck to you guys. I think you're going to really enjoy winning Quantum Break. You can't beat free games.
Very nice.
So thanks to Marcus for doing that. Let's tell everybody how they can get a hold of us and get the heck out of here. We're on Twitter. That's maybe the most fun way to get a hold of us. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ. We've got an email address, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. We've also got another podcast for you to check out, Richard's other podcast. It's called Home On. They cover home automation and control news. Richard, what's going on with the latest episode of Home On?
So right now, the episode that's up is the one that I've talked about in the past with Josh Bradshaw from Muzzle. You know, this means that we have spoken with kind of the three most well-known aggregator apps out there. We've spoken with Yonomi, we've spoken with Thington, and we've spoken with Muzzle. So a lot of good information in that episode. And I actually got a chance to see Josh while I was down at IoT World last week too. So that was great. And then coming up, I visited the store Beta in Palo Alto and interviewed their chief marketing officer, Phil Robb, who we've spoken with before. And I also got a chance to speak with one of their vendor partners that's selling a brand new product in their store that just arrived the day that I was down there. I had such a great visit, Josh. I had free access to the store an hour and a half before it was even open.
Ooh, that's nice.
It was great. And I'm very likely going to end up buying something that they sell there. I might just have to have a Bluetooth connected suitcase. And laugh all you will. I'll talk about it at a later point. It's really freaking cool. So anyway, had some great interviews there. This upcoming episode is going to be a little bit different from what we normally do. I'm going to try to do this more as a kind of This American Life storytelling type of episode. So it's not going to be our usual format, but I expect to have that out sometime next week.
Very cool. And the one thing I do want to point out, the episode that's out there right now, where you speak with Josh Bradshaw from Muzzle, if you're into home automation and you're a Windows user, this is one of those rare occasions where a popular app is on Windows Phone. There is a Muzzle app for Windows Phone. So,
and Windows
definitely,
10.
Yeah, and Windows 10. So go and check out the app, but even more importantly, go and check out this episode of Home On. You can find all of our podcasts on iTunes and Pocket Cast. We're on Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio. And recently, now finally, on Google Play. We've got links to all of those, including Google Play now, in the show notes here. So you can find them anywhere. You can subscribe in all of those places. And if you want to help us out, the best way you can do that, head on over to iTunes, leave us a rating, leave us a review. It helps us out a lot. And we really, really appreciate it when you guys can do that for us. Then if you want to really talk to us as live as possible, as much in real time as you possibly can, come and listen to the show as we record it. You can do that right on our website. We normally record the show Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. That's amazingly when we did it this week. And your best way to find out when we're going to do it, because sometimes it isn't on that day or time, follow us on Twitter. We always tweet when we're going to be doing the live show. And it's a lot of fun to have you guys in the chat room while we're recording. So that's going to do it for episode 368. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back next time for episode 369. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.